well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend. Actually had some wicked storms roll through last night, and I've got some, could have been worse, but definitely have some storm damage to take care of. After we conclude today's episode, going to be talking with our friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio about all of the, you know, we know what the Supreme Court is taking up the quote-unquote assault weapon ban issue, right? Viramontes versus Cook County, Grant versus Higgins, which is a challenge to Connecticut's semi-auto ban, I believe National Association of Gun Rights versus Lamont as well. But there are a number of other issues that the court could address as early as next term. And I thought in today's conversation with Mark, we'd kind of go through some of those issues, because you've got cases, you've got cases that are already pending. The cert petition's been filed. When the justices get back from summer recess, they will hear these petitions, talk about them in the first conference of the fall term. You've got others that are on their way to the Supreme Court. You've got some that may be one stop away, but could get up there as early as this coming term. And a number of critically important issues, including one that the Supreme Court has ducked up until now. Will they continue to do so? The issue of when exactly our right to keep and bear arms kicks in. Is it 18? Is it 21? Is it some rights kick in at 18, others kick in at 21? There's a circuit court split on the issue right now, and the Supreme Court could have the opportunity to address it, although they denied cert to five cases just a couple of weeks ago. It could happen. They could take up this issue next term. Honestly, it's hard to predict what the court is going to do. But Mark and I try to do our best in the conversation. Take a look and a listen. Mark, good morning to you, sir. Thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Cam. Thanks much for having me.
Absolutely. We got so much to talk about. You know, it's the summer. A lot of legislative sessions are over. The Supreme Court's off on their summer break. We know they're going to be taking up a hardware ban case when they get back in the fall. We'll start actually to see, I guess, the amicus briefs or not even the amicus briefs, but the respondents briefs coming in. I think late August is the first deadline. And then we'll, you know, have that round of briefing. But there's so much happening right below the Supreme Court level, right? I mean, there are so many issues, whether we're talking about the Second Amendment rights of adults under the age of 21, talking about the ability to carry across state lines, you know, there are some hugely important issues that I think the Supreme Court may have the opportunity to take up next term as well, right? I mean, we saw the cert grant the last conference of this past term, but there are a number of cases that are awaiting the Supreme Court when they get back in the fall. Where do you want to start, Mark? That's the question. You want to start with the under 21s, or do you want to start with the reciprocity, or at least the ability to carry across state line issues?
Well, I think we go all those places, but I want to start with the question of where do you start, because that's been my question to my guests over the last month and a half. Where do we even start? In fact, right before we went to live camera, you and I had that discussion. Where do we start? Because there, and ladies and gentlemen, there is so much happening historically now regarding Second Amendment issues in your rights and freedoms, that those of us who talk about these things really in this historic context ask ourselves that question, my gosh, where do we start? So that is a great and legitimate question. I think we can hit all of it, because I think it all ties together. Part of what I talked about last night was the fourth, was Maryland. You know, everybody's big issue lately, and Trump has been talking about this fairly recently, about concealed carry reciprocity, right, Cam? Mm-hmm. Thune's had a bill that's lingered for how long? Well over 12, 15 years. It's just sat there and done nothing.
Yep.
It could have been taken up. It wasn't. Well, you know, go back to a previous Trump administration. It could have been taken up when Republicans controlled the Senate. And they didn't. Now it lingers. Now we've got the lawsuit that could eventually reach SCOTUS regarding Maryland's refusal to accept out-of-state permits, which would nullify Thune's bill altogether. But even more historic about historically going back, let's phrase that properly. Will national how important is national reciprocity today versus 10 years ago. Look at what's happened with constitutional carry. You've got constitutional carry now in, what, 29 states, soon to be 30, hopefully 31. There's been some dragging of the feet in a couple of these states, but hopefully, let's just say right now, it's, you know, a little bit more than half the nation. Mm-hmm. So it's half the problem that it was 10 years ago, which is why it's extremely important that this gets put to bed quickly and why the Maryland case, I think, is going to be so important moving forward. I don't think we'll ever see concealed carry reciprocity move through the Senate. I don't care what the makeup of the Senate is. I just don't think we're ever going to see it. There's been ample opportunity for it. Trump has been pushing for it. For whatever reason, the Senate's not moving on it, likely because it's a 60-vote threshold. The filibuster is still there. Just this past week, Trump was screaming about getting rid of the filibuster again. And I quote Trump, because if we don't, the Democrats will do it if they win in November, which is all true. Okay, then you start looking at court packing because they're looking at 2028. I mean, all of this nuance involved here is really remarkable and fun to analyze, quite frankly. But we do need to get rid of it. I think the Maryland case might be that little glimmer of hope moving forward for SCOTUS to take, because that question does have to be answered. And it has been addressed in some areas, going back to Heller and the right to carry outside the home, Bruin, et cetera. Yeah. So I think we'll see it at some point.
I hope so. I mean, so this case is going up to the Maryland Supreme Court, and depending on what happens there, then the only place to appeal would be the U.S. Supreme Court, right?
Right.
And we've seen some amicus briefs filed, including one, I think, on behalf of Second Amendment Foundation, CCR Citizens Committee, where you and I serve as unpaid board members, National Rifle Association, California Rifle and Pistol Association, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, Maryland Shall Issue Second Amendment Law Center, and the Cato Institute. You know, there was a case that came out of Maryland last term that the Supreme Court, and it was the same issue, right? It was a woman who, I believe, had a valid Virginia permit, ended up crossing the bridge into Maryland, got pulled over. I guess there was some sort of incident, I think, where like a road, she was the victim of a road rage incident.
Yeah.
And she ended up displaying her firearm. She didn't pull the trigger, but anyway, she was arrested for carrying without a permit. She represented herself, which is not an automatic denial for the Supreme Court, but I think it does make it a little bit more difficult for the Supreme Court to accept the case. Actually, you know, I take that back. She originally was representing herself. She did get counsel, later on, but anyway, the Supreme Court, denied cert in that case. So they had the opportunity last term. Here is another opportunity, right? And it's, you know, again, you got a guy with a valid DC permit who was pulled over in one of the DC suburbs of Maryland. He was a passenger in a car. He had a firearm. He gets charged because even though he could legally carry in the District of Columbia, once you cross that invisible line into Maryland, all of a sudden now you are, you know, prohibited from carrying. I hope that the Maryland Supreme Court will take up this case. I hope that they side in his favor. I expect if they do, frankly, I think that might kill the case. I don't know that Maryland's attorney general would risk bringing this to the Supreme Court. There'd be an awful lot of pressure on him by gun control groups.
Not to
take the loss, man. Right. We don't want this to be the vehicle for national right to carry reciprocity. But given that this is Maryland, Mark, I'm not that confident the Maryland Supreme Court is going to recognize the Second Amendment. And I think there's every chance that that this case does get appealed up to the Supreme Court, whether it is next term, maybe the term after. But I think that there are going to be, there's also a case out of the Eighth Circuit. There's a truck driver who has been fighting this national rights lack of reciprocity. That case, I think, could maybe already, maybe I think it is to in a position where he could go up to the Supreme Court. We might be waiting on the Eighth Circuit's decision there. But there are going to be other opportunities for this issue to be addressed. And I hope that the court's going to take this up, because as you say, this may be half the problem that it was a decade ago.
But it's still a problem, Cam.
Right.
The other half. Okay, let's talk about that other half. It is still a problem. And here's where it gets really interesting, because Bruin dealt with the right to carry outside the home. That was laid out in Bruin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The question here, the underlying question is, and this is what Supreme Court, I think, will eventually answer, which I think this is a ripe case for that, you know, but so was the Snopes case. Okay. We know where Maryland is. Maryland's in the Fourth Circuit. We know what the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to do. We already know what's coming down that pike, why Supreme Court should probably take this. But does the right to carry stop? Do you lose your Second Amendment right when you cross another state line? And SCOTUS, we know how they're going to answer that question. They've already answered it. Yeah. It's the states that are defying this, which is why I think they're going to take one of these cases. Hopefully they do. Hopefully they put it to bed. That eliminates the whole national reciprocity. Talking with Jared Yanis from Guns and Gadgets last night on Armed American Radio, Congress shouldn't be involved in this anyway. This is a fundamental constitutional right that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And SCOTUS has already addressed this. With the way this has been moving over the last 2 months, Cam, nothing will shock me at this point. Nothing. Either way, nothing will shock me at all. It's been remarkable.
Yeah, it has been. There's also, by the way, the Virgin Islands lawsuit. I think this is FPC filed the lawsuit. Because in the Virgin Islands, there's no way for you to get a non-resident carry permit. You just can't. Now what we've seen in states like California, because there've been challenges there with a lack of non-resident carry, they've opened up the process to non-residents. I still think that's great, but it's still a problem, right? Because if you want to do that, if you want to carry in all 50 states, how many permits are you going to have to get, right? You're talking thousands of dollars. Some of these states require you to go in person to get interviewed or even drop off your application.
Right.
So now you're talking about making an extra trip, right, which costs even more money.
Right.
Training requirements, the recognition, the ability for non-residents to acquire a license is, I think, a half step forward.
Yeah. Also talking Virgin Islands, DOJ. Yeah. Is slapping the Virgin Islands right now as well. Again, we're getting this from all angles now. This is a multi-pronged attack on those who have been attacking our rights for decades to come. And I could easily, I wish we had 3 hours, because we could easily go into the importance of the midterms here and why this all matters. Because if we lose the Senate in the midterms, which I don't think we're going to do, I'm the eternal optimist there. I don't think we do. In fact, I think we might pick up a seat or two in the Senate. John Ossoff in Georgia concerns me somewhat. I'm in Georgia. I would have told you a year ago he was a shoo-in to lose. I'm not convinced about that right now. Okay, that's a whole different show. But the fact of the matter is, if we lose the Senate, why does all of this matter? Think about this going forward, because the Democrats are now looking at 2028. Every gain that we've made now, could every bit of it could be absolutely wiped out, which is why when you see the DOJ attacking this from all these multi-pronged sides and all these court victories, all of this is designed to do what Todd Blanche told me when I interviewed him at the NRA, and that was to lock down our Second Amendment rights going forward, regardless of what happens in the midterms, even though he said we want to win it, we don't want to lose it. But if we do, we want to make sure that our rights are locked down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That all goes out the window if we lose the House and Senate and the White House in 2028, particularly if Trump is right and the Democrats, as he said to quote him, in fact, nuke the filibuster, all bets are off the table. Wow. Then it gets very serious, because they're going to start packing the court and we will be powerless to stop it. Guys, you have got to stay involved in this. The winds are piling up, but we can't get complacent. Keep your foot on that accelerator is the advice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right. So we got a couple of other issues here, right? You got the under 21 issue. You and I were talking about this off the air as well. Supreme Court kept a circuit court split in place. You talk about nothing surprises you anymore. This was one of the surprising decisions at the end of the term. You've got, the Fifth Circuit says, yes, the Second Amendment kicks in when you turn 18. You've got the 11th Circuit that says, no, it's 21, because back in the day, 1791, anybody under the age of 21 was considered a minor when it came to entering into contracts. I mean, this is a very bizarre decision, but there is that circuit court split. And then you've got Pennsylvania, which is the Third Circuit, that says 18 to 20 year olds have the right to carry. You've got, I believe, the Fourth Circuit that says, no, they don't. So on the issue of sales, the issue of carrying, again, there's a circuit court split.
Yes.
That exists at the moment. And you said last Friday, the 11th Circuit took action in a case dealing with a Georgia law.
Correct.
Limiting the right. This is the right to carry for under 21s, right?
Yeah. The Second Amendment, Inc. An organization, I'm in Georgia. I'm not familiar with the organization. I just want to say that up front. I don't know if it was formed to file the lawsuit. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. But it was Second Amendment, Inc. versus Governor Kemp. they lost. It was for the right to carry. And in the state of Georgia, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, unless you have military background or active duty military, you cannot carry between 18 and until you are 21 years old. Now, we're a constitutional carry state. And the Fifth Circuit has already found that that age group is, in fact, part of the people as a political body. Therefore, they have a right to carry, as you mentioned, in the Fifth Circuit. And then we have the splits all over the place. Well, the district court in Georgia ruled that the ban on carry was constitutional. The 11th Circuit upheld that. And a really interesting move on Friday, in light of the Wolford and Hamani decision, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals sent the case back, vacated it and sent it back to the lower court to review in light of the Wolford and Hamani decision that the 11th Circuit said they did not have the benefit of 2 months earlier when they originally ruled. So the court sent it back to the lower court to re-review. Now, it's interesting to me because I feel pretty certain I'm not a lawyer. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe you can correct me. But the 11th Circuit could have said, well, our decision is gone now. Okay. I think that's what they were saying by sending it back to the lower court, knowing that they're going to get another decision in it, either a constitutional or not, and it will go back to the 11th Circuit for review again. Now, this is all different than Florida. Some people are probably paying attention here because watchers of Cam and Company and Armed American Radio, et cetera, are plugged into this. A lot of you might be thinking, well, didn't the NRA just win? Wasn't Comerford just on your show 2 weeks ago, Mark, claiming victory in Florida of 18-20? Absolutely. However, that was not carry. That was for the purchase of a firearm from an FFL. These are two separate issues here. So 18-20-year-old is on the table, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. Here's my prediction. The cavalry is coming. It's just not coming as fast as we want it to. But all of these are on the table now. And eventually what's going to happen is we're going to wipe out those bans on 18-20-year-olds. Okay. Assault weapons are history. And then the question becomes for this discussion, what are the Democrats going to do next when it's now not when they're not 0-5, they're 0-8 or 0-9. Now, what do they do? Because New Jersey has already signaled, Cam, a great place to segue, that they are going to double down in light of the Third Circuit's decision and try more gun control. The Trace just last week was reporting that the Brady campaign or Giffords, whoever all these gun grabbers are, they're all being funded by Bloomberg, are now looking at, okay, if the Supreme Court rules that assault weapons are in fact constitutional, we need to start thinking about putting them behind a firewall, in this case, a permit firewall. So they've already opened their playbook to us. We know what they're going to do.
Yep.
That's why we can't let off the gas. They're going to try to permit you and charge you enough money that it dissuades you from exercising your right. And I have a feeling in New Jersey, none of that's going to matter. It's not going to matter in California, Illinois, New York. People might put up with that for a little bit, but then it's just going to cause more litigation. And down the road, we're just going to have to keep fighting them because, as Ryan Petty says, they will never stop, period.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, Colorado's permit to purchase for
Colorado, Rhode Island
takes effect August the 1st, you know, so I mean, they that's got to be the test case. And by the way, we've already got a lawsuit going on there. So that'll be the top of the queue. I think you're right. I think they are going to go to permitting. But also speaking of New Jersey, you know, not only did we have the decision that came out creating that circuit court split on the issue of, you know, gun and magazine bans, but we're still waiting on the Third Circuit's en banc decision in Coons and Siegel versus Placken. Right. That is the challenge to all of the gun-free zones that New Jersey put in place after Bruin. That could come out really at any time. And pending the Supreme Court's first conference, there are two cases out of Maryland, Novotny versus Moore, and I believe Moore versus Kipke. There are also Bruin response lawsuits, yeah. Right? Maryland's gun-free zone. So there's an issue that is teed up. You know, we had Wolford. We had the vampire rule struck down last term. Will the Supreme Court go further and say, because, you know, you go back and you read Wolford versus Lopez,
right?
And Justice Alito's talking about, you know, this vampire rule stops people from carrying wherever they are throughout their day. They're going to the grocery store. They're going to the gas station. Well, Maryland, by statute, prohibits a lot of these places individually. Is the Supreme Court ready to take up the issue of gun-free zones, not just the vampire rule? You say yes?
Yes, I absolutely agree with that, because we have to go back to Bruin as well, too. And when you go, when the court finds that you have a right to carry in public, and then you look at what happens, see, all these things tie together. Hindsight is 20/20, right? We can look in the rearview mirror and form a pretty clear picture of what we see going down the road, especially in light of the direction that these things have been moving. The building blocks are in place. And to everybody that's frustrated why it took so long to get here, this is why. The Supreme Court knew what they were doing. Thomas knew what he was doing. Alito, Kavanaugh, they knew what they were doing. They knew that it was going to take 3 and 4 years to build some of this, to see these challenges arise and how the antis were going to formulate their challenges in light of the history and context test in Bruin, et cetera. Now we begin to see this take shape, right? So as you said, New York, Maryland, they make it impossible to carry anywhere. Your state is attempting to do the same thing. Okay. The Democrats will do it nationwide. It's a matter of time before the court absolutely takes one of these, because it's another natural progression from Bruin, post Bruin. And Wolford and Alito's comments could absolutely be seen as a signal without being a signal. In other words, tell me what you're thinking without telling me what you're thinking here, because it fits like a glove. So they're going to have to address it at some point. I'm confident in that. It's going to be sooner rather than later, I think.
All right. Mark, we could do this for 3 hours, but unfortunately, we are rapidly running out of time.
We didn't even get to the First Circuit decision,
defiance. Okay. Which is, the First Circuit and the Seventh Circuit and the Third Circuit and the First Circuit decision is, let's not open that can of worms, because that could get me going for like half an hour. All right. Let folks know how they can find you if they want to check out the Daily Defense, if they want to check out the Big Sunday Monster Cast. Yeah. Where do they go?
ArmedAmericanRadio.com. You can listen live and watch live 5 days a week on Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Eastern, 1 to 2 Pacific. And on Sundays, you can watch or listen to the Monster Cast, 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Pacific. We're blowing up on YouTube. Please subscribe to Armed American Radio on YouTube. We would appreciate that. Like, comment, and subscribe. I love you guys. Cam, I wish we had more time. I mean, I'm game. If you want to do this for the rest of the week, I'm open, because there's still not enough time, man. But I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. I love you.
Always a pleasure, man. Love you, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Thank you, Cam.
My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program. Looking forward to continuing the conversation, probably not tomorrow, but in the very near future for sure. Normally, we do our good deed of the day, a recidivist report, our armed citizen story after we finish our interview. But apologies. Like I said, I've got some storm damage that I'm dealing with here, and I need to actually talk to the folks about cleaning up some of this storm damage. So we will pick that up again tomorrow. I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always, and we will have a full schedule of stories at bearingarms.com today. I am writing around the recovery efforts, so be sure to check that out. Lots of good news to report, but we do have some good news to report. We've got some bad news as well, and some intriguing possibilities like David Hogg running the Democratic National Committee. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. As well as Mondays can be enjoyed. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.